PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
Hello, you golfing legends, and welcome back to another episode of the original Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and joining me this week is my good buddy, Mr. Jeremy Talks. It says JD Talks into the name, so obviously big forum guy over there at THP. He's the content director, creative director over on the main page. Jeremy, welcome.
Hello, sir.
I'm digging the shirt energy today. I for the first time in probably, I don't know, 2 years, I'm going like straight into repping the Blue Jays here today, which is weird. I'm usually in a golf shirt. You're rocking bourbon.
If I was thinking, I would have wore a Tiger shirt just specifically to throw that against you. But yeah, I'm rocking the bourbon shirt today.
Yeah, it looks good.
Magic brown water for fun people.
how are you doing, buddy? Everything good?
I'm doing great. It's been a rough week at home a little bit with my daughter moving to college tomorrow. So trying to deal with that, but otherwise everything's great.
Yeah, that's a big moment. I've got a few years for that, so I'm not super worried about it right now. But my family all went back to school, so I feel like an empty nester because every day is so quiet here. So it's weird. So we just got back from a trip ourselves, and I think the world should probably hear about it a little bit. We were at Grable up there in Maxwell, Nebraska. And let's be honest, I didn't know where North Platte was. I didn't know where Maxwell was until just a couple weeks ago. So, we went up there with Golf Tech, and Mr. Adam Rank joined us, who is an absolute character. What did you think about that?
That property is insane. Sunrises, sunsets, like if you've ever been to the beach and you see the sun going down or coming up over the water, it's quite different than anything you see at home on a daily basis. So when you're out in the middle of nowhere in the sand hills of Nebraska, it's quite a sight to see for sure.
So I'm aware that there are sand hills in Nebraska now. I was more under the impression like the sand was limited to the ocean, and maybe it's my geographic idiocy or inability to comprehend that there are a variety of different locations out there. But I'll tell you what, when we're driving up and I saw all these hills with like sand all over it, but we're in like the middle of America basically, I didn't see it coming, dude. It wasn't the type of grass, it wasn't the type of profile I was thinking it was, even though we'd seen it many times or a couple times already with THP. Did the location surprise you at all?
100,000%, yes. Like you said, I don't know what I expected. We saw pictures before, but as you know, with anything golf in pictures, it just never does it justice, right? Seeing it yourself is like just land as far as the eye can see, and then in the middle of it is this beautiful manicured golf course. It's just wild. It was so much fun, though.
So we opted to fly into North Platte, which was, and listen, all you guys out there, everyone's taking a golf trip, right? Whether it's down the highway or whether it's, on an airplane or down to the beach or whatever. This was the first for me. We flew into North Platte, which has exactly one gate. I'm pretty sure our pilot took our clubs off the plane and put it in the thing for us. I've never seen anything like it. It was incredibly cool, but so different because it's just you really do get to go to places you never expect when you incorporate it with golf. And I think it, as frustrating as the amount of time it was to get there and wait, the connections, it's definitely not like a go in today, play tomorrow, and go home tomorrow night type of thing. Oh. It's like you need to book half a week to play a couple times.
Definitely plan on staying a few days for sure.
Yeah, man. But it's like, it's just different. And I really appreciate that because I've said many times, like there's lots of places in this world I'd love to experience, but I'm pretty sure there's 1,000 experiences I've yet to have here. And that was one that really sort of kickstarted that validation of that perspective for me. It's like, just absolutely had no idea it would be like that, and yet somehow it is.
No, and I don't think many people would have Nebraska on their list of places they want to go play golf, right? It certainly wasn't at the top of mind until we got to go experience this place, and now I can't wait to go back someday.
Yeah, that's incredibly optimistic of you. It's great. One thing I wanted to talk about, and I'm sure people can relate to it, is that every golf trip is 100% at the mercy of the elements. You have no control over what the clouds decide to do. And in our case, so, you know, all jokes aside, the typical process for every time I get together with Jeremy and play golf is we get together and it's like go, go, go from the second you get there to the second you leave. And this was totally different because, like, we went and hung out in Denver Airport for 6.5 hours and drank beers and had delicious Denver
Mexican food.
And then we get there and it's like, all right, we get to hang. We get to go to this random local place and drink craft beer. And then the following day we hang out again for a while. It's like things are moving so much slower. So we were joking around. It's like, you know what? It'll be great, though, because when we get on property, like, it'll be over as soon as it starts, like as it always does.
Right.
So we get done, we do this awesome fantasy football draft, which is hilarious. Enjoy some of the facilities like the range and have an amazing dinner. Then we wake up the following day. It's early for me. I know it's probably late for you, and it's especially late or early for me when, you know, the drinks are definitely flowing the night before.
Sure.
But we all get ready to go and we're getting ready to go to the range and oh, look at giant rain clouds flowing through. And I have pictures. And if you guys follow the thread on THP, I mean, listen, I'm turning like a bunch of stories into one, but the big part of it is we wait again and we're just getting blasted with rain. Right. And then suddenly the course is not open and we will reevaluate later. And
that was the worst.
It's like,
sorry, give me 1 second.
You're right.
I want to do that again.
It's like, you're hurrying up to wait and then you get like all this excitement, all this pent up emotion going. And then it's just like, you wait again. And then obviously finally it worked out. We got to play. And naturally, as soon as things really started flowing, the couple of days we had there was gone. But man, you know what I'm talking about? Like the idea that golf trips are so 100% reliant on decent weather.
Oh, 100%. And you know, if there's anything I've learned from this trip, it is to always come prepared. I typically have rain gloves at a very minimum in my bag and some rain gear of some kind. But I checked before I left and there was literally no rain in the forecast, like nothing. And I was like, okay, I'm not going to bring it this time. We're going to be good. I'm going to enjoy some nice weather. We get there and we wake up that morning and it was just the wildest looking rolling dark clouds you've ever seen. And I was like, oh, this is not good. You know, it's not good. And had they let us go out in the rain, like, of course I still would have went, but I'm prepared. Just in case, right? That is an advertisement for any golf trip you ever go on. Bring every single thing that you may ever need for your golf bag so you can go play. It's like, yeah. if you go to Bandon Dunes or something like that, you're prepared for it. You know it's gonna rain, probably it's gonna be windy. You're gonna have all that stuff. But middle Nebraska area, really wasn't thinking that at all. Yeah.
Yeah. It looked like at one point they were going to trade out the carts for kayaks. you look down at the golf course and it is just pooling everywhere. And it's so shocking because, like you said, I looked at the forecast too, and I had a rain jacket already in my bag, so I didn't take it out. And I randomly shoved an umbrella in at the very last second. I think I might have had one of my two rain gloves in it. Like, it's just, you know, absolutely kind of sort of not really prepared for it. Right. But at the same time, like we had no expectations of it. And then if you look, like it was definitely producing as it was coming. And at one point I held my phone up to you and it's this like 1 mile wide or 2 mile wide sliver of red on the radar.
Red, yeah.
And it's like an entire line going down where we are and it's going vertical. Like it's moving vertical. I'm like,
I've never seen that before either. I've never seen that before.
If you just move it over like half the screen, we're not even getting touched. But I think what was cool about that, since we did end up getting to play, so it wasn't like a total throwaway, was, man, what a crazy look rain has in Nebraska, because you have those rolling hills so you can see for miles in every direction, right?
Yep.
So you can see the rain coming, whereas like in Ohio you look one way, you might see a mile, so you don't really know it's gonna hit you. There it's like, oh, okay, that's gonna come and do some damage to me emotionally. what's it like in Michigan? You don't have that same amount of visual, do you?
It's very similar to what you deal with in Ohio.
Yeah.
On a daily basis.
That was wild, man. And shout out to the guys at Gray Bowl. We got out and walked 10 holes in the afternoon and then rode the other 8.
What are your thoughts on that? Just I thought it was honestly, first of all, to be able to go out after all that rain was pretty darn cool. Like we saw rivers flowing down 18 and puddles on the greens. And that course drained so well. It was unbelievable. So to even get to go out and walk was, I felt like a special treat. Like I would rather walk and carry, which I never do, by the way. I would rather walk and carry and enjoy a course than do cart path only. Typically. Now, Grable has no cart paths.
Okay.
But I think it's a treat to see the course differently. I played a different Dormy course earlier this year with rain and it was cart path only. And you know, just, it's not the same. You don't get to experience the course when you're walking to it from the side to your ball every single time. So yeah. I just thought it was a cool little treat after all that rain.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm not really joking when I say that we could have used kayaks in the morning. Like there was enough poolage that at least, I mean, some areas were still there in the afternoon, like where it really pooled up, but the actual golf course itself, like the grass portion of the golf course, was almost, I don't think I walked in a single puddle. And my course would be CPO for probably 2 or 3 days after a rain like that, for the record, here in Ohio. And for them to, first of all, let us out, I agree with you. I think it's amazing. And I would almost always prefer to walk versus CPO. Just me personally, and you know, maybe a push cart or obviously something like a Finn scooter would be super fun. But yeah, it was going to segue in another conversation I'd love to have with you. But before we get there, I was shocked at how that course didn't feel other than the bunkers, which were, you know, pretty washed out. I mean, they're bunkers with pools and pools of rain. That's pretty much what happens. Right. And especially when you have a lot of waste area. But the actual grass portion of the golf course, like, at one point, especially when we got back in the carts, I totally forgot that it had rained that morning based on the way the course played. Like it wasn't soft. It still had a lot of firmness. Shout out to the mascot in the back there. The greens,
it was still hard to push a tee in the ground and some of the tee boxes too, which is just crazy to think about.
Yeah. And the greens were still incredibly firm. Like I haven't experienced anything like that. I don't know that I've ever gone to another place that has held or defended against rain like that. Have you?
No, I don't think I have either. I thought for sure, like, there's no chance. When they said we will reevaluate like 2 hours from what time it was, whatever time that was, I thought like, oh man, this is not good.
That was like the third wave of rain at about 9:30 or 10 o'clock, and we're all like, all right, it's time for lunch.
Yeah, because at one point it stopped enough, we actually went out to the range and was like, okay, we're gonna get to go. And then it all came down again.
Yeah. One of the things that I'm curious about for the listeners and those who follow on the forum, we'll definitely get this conversation going in a thread of its own. I want to hear what your emotional state is like when you've gone somewhere to play and you're like just stuck waiting. especially if you haven't played yet, I feel like that had a big role as well. Because if it's day two, I'm like, oh, I'll just relax a little bit and enjoy it. But like, that place is nuts. The second you get there, you want to be on the golf course. So you know, yep. You get all this pent up emotion to go do it. You've read the stories, you've seen it. Like, obviously, if you're going on a golf trip, like, you have an expectation of where you're going, what the course is like. So of course you want to experience it. So I'd love to know what people think about that, what it's like for them to go and have to wait. And again, this is a celebration. We got so lucky with how things worked out. But I was sitting there on the amazing deck, listening to the rain pound onto the rooftop, drinking, I don't know, boozy coffee or something, and just like feeling sorry for myself. I was like, I just want to go on the golf course. Like, I'll go get my rain jacket, just open it. How are you feeling at that point? Were you just like,
it was just disappointment. I think you could see it on everyone's face. Like, come on, like, we want to go, like, not again. Yeah. You know, we had been there, you know, the day before, did a fantasy draft, and mm-hmm. everyone's excited to go out and play. And our tee time was supposed to be 8 a.m. And what was it, like 3 o'clock or something by the time we were able to get out there?
Yeah, two.
I would say around noon when people started eating lunch, we're just starting to lose hope that it was actually going to happen, right?
Well, what a celebration that it did. And it does segue into my next question to you. And we had the privilege of walking the first 10 holes. And I'll tell you what, man, there's something weirdly special. And I know not a lot of people agree with me, and I'm fine with that. But to experience a course on the ground, not zip into the next ball, to walk it, to look around as you're going, to have just casual conversation about it, get to snap photos along the way. I mean, that to me is a much more intimate and kind of emotional experience to do that. And what a great golf course like Greybull to have a chance to really take it in that way. Did you feel a different vibe when you went through that?
Oh yeah. I think I mentioned that earlier. It was just like a special treat versus riding in the cart. Sure. Riding in the cart's fun. If you have a really good cart mate, you're jamming to some music, you know, just having a great time, but walking directly to your ball or having a conversation along the way with the whole entire group at some points versus just the person you're riding with is just pretty cool. You know, you really get to know people a little bit better when you spend more time with them in that way, I think, on the golf course.
Yeah, that was so fun, man. I assume it's memorable regardless, but that first 10 holes that we got to walk, I think it's just going to be like anchored into my brain for a very long time because it just felt different. We're in a totally different setting and an unbelievable location. And now you get to just like slowly experience it and not like group two slow, but like just generally speaking by comparison to riding.
So I have two questions. One, it never felt slow at any point while we were walking to me. I don't know if it did to you at all.
Well, but we waited on you all day, so I mean, just specific.
I had a second question and I totally just lost it. Sorry.
that happens. No, the sad part was, that was the other day. No, I think the pace was good. I think we moved around pretty well. And
I remember. Sorry to cut you off.
No, it's fine. Go ahead.
Were you sad when they brought the carts back out? Because at one point I thought to myself, like, we played 10 holes. Like, let's just walk the rest of it. You know, did that cross your mind at all? Or were you like, okay, I can't wait to get in a cart now?
Well, we also had a good friend of ours on our phones with us telling us to make sure we, you know, finished in time. So the idea that we could speed it up a little bit, and I don't care what you say, riding in a cart is always going to be faster than walking. So you know, that felt like you got a real taste of it. I don't think it would have added a ton walking the back nine. I played better when I was walking, so I don't know if there's a piece to that. But no, I was really happy. I think by that point, there was so much relief and release. You know, like the morning was so exciting and so emotional from a let's get out there standpoint that any piece of it felt like a victory. So each subtle change that occurred, we did have a lot of fun with the guys from the course who were all great. They drove by us and said, oh, you just missed the cutoff. Everyone else gets carts. And we were like, all right, whatever. And they're like, now we're messing around. And then they come out with carts and they took them to the first group first. So they drove right by us and we're all like, oh, here we go. They weren't messing around. And you know, that was pretty fun, but no, I don't think it took it away. What about you?
No, I don't think so either. I was actually kind of, like I said, I thought for a second, like,
say relieved.
But then when I got in the cart, I was a little bit relieved until, you know, you sit for a little bit and you start to feel things stiffen up.
Okay.
Like I wasn't feeling this when I was walking, but now I'm feeling it now.
Man, that's
so I think
good.
That's why part of the playing better while I was walking part came in.
Yeah. I mean, a great excuse to use anyway,
yep.
For sure. Hey, I want to talk to you. I feel like we could chat about Grey Bull for hours, but I really want to talk to you about some new wedges you've had in the bag. And we went, you got to experience TPI and all of its greatness down there, the Titleist Performance Institute. You got a full taste of what those wedges can do for your game. You got a fitting. What'd you think, man?
They're fun. They spin a lot. And, but if we go back to the TPI part, the fitting that we did with the wedge fitting was kind of eye opening. I thought maybe I was like doing something one way, but in reality, apparently I'm doing it in a different way. So that was fun to learn, different balances and grinds.
What do you mean by that?
We did the fitting at TPI.
And yeah.
Every person had their own fitter, and what they did was super cool because it was a blind fitting. He would just hand me a wedge, whatever grind and bounce it was. He said he wasn't even looking at it either. And then I would hit a couple shots and he would put it down, make a pile, you know. And in the end, to long story short, I was playing previously a low bounce wedge around the greens, what I thought was working for me, but I was fit to a higher bounce wedge with a different grind that I was playing. And it's kind of fun now knowing that that is what I should be playing based on my personal delivery of the golf club. And I've seen nothing but great results ever since putting them in the bag.
So at one point he moved you off the green you were working at and started to hit towards my green. And I saw you hit two really good shots. I'm like, hey, nice shot, Jay. And you were so locked into whatever he was saying. I don't think you heard me. I still don't think you even knew I mentioned anything to it. So that was really funny to watch.
I definitely did not hear that at all.
Yeah, I'm like laughing. My guy Brandon, we're just hanging out. He that jerk, and I mean that lovingly, put me right behind a bunker and said, all right, hit to that pin. I'm like, oh, that little pin right there, that tight lie there, no problem. He's like, well, I'm not just gonna fit you on an easy lie. I'm like, all right, then we're gonna do this.
That's a good thing, right?
Well, yeah, it showed a lot of strength and weakness, I guess you could say. Yeah, the Vokies, man, they've always been really impressive to me, and their ability and willingness to create new concepts, new grinds, and you know, push their own boundaries, I think is awesome. And I ended up in K-Star, which is a Wedgeworks grind, which fortunately or unfortunately is a rustable wedge. Is rustable
a rustable word?
Rustable,
sure.
Like an unrustable. I need an unrustable wedge.
There you go.
A wedge that can rust, which is exceptionally terrifying to my mental game. But I'll tell you what, dude, we were messing around with like some crazy low bounce wedges, like M grinds and T grinds and like four. And we ended up, I don't know if they have a two or not, but we were getting down there. And then I went back. So I'm using this K-Star and I'm like really enjoying the contact I'm getting. And at one point he's like, all right, well, try this one. I have a thought. So he hands it to me and I hit it. I was like, oh, I don't think I'm making the same quality contact. He goes, oh, cause that's your gamer grind that you've been using. I'm like, oh God.
Wow.
Like that was an unfortunately honest, unfair yet beautiful moment for me. But I've been fit, so it's not like I was doing it all just on my own pretense. I think we just found something that worked really well in the K-Star. And I'll tell you what, dude, it's working out pretty good. I love the engage when I get around to green with it. It's perfectly useful on full swings. And even like the three quarter shots, I just feel like I really square it up well.
Yeah, I found pretty much the same. I have different grinds than you. It's ironically nothing I would have fit myself into using their fitting tool or anyone's, you know, database of things that you plug in the, you know, what kind of grass you play on and this kind of stuff.
Like their online wedge selector type of thing?
Yeah, it was in there as one of the three options, but it's not one I probably would have picked. I would have grabbed an M grind or a K grind or a T grind maybe for myself to play around with, thinking that it would work for me. And it probably would at some point, but I would deal with some of the issues I've experienced while using like a T grind, where I dig into the ground a little bit if I'm not aggressive with it.
So which grind did you end up with?
I have the F grind in my 48 and 54, and I have a D grind in my 60.
The D. Okay.
Yep.
Nice. Yeah. I'm seeing a lot more D's show up in people's bags. It's definitely a unique one.
Yeah. It for whatever reason, I don't know all the science behind it for me. But it works great. I couldn't even tell you the last time I like just stubbed a wedge in the ground. So
what did you do for finish?
I went with the nickel, which I think looks absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of it.
I've been like a black to black oxide guy for a long time. And listen, I'm not suffering with this whole raw wedge thing, but it is different. And it's kind of fun to watch, man. Like, you can definitely tell the face is getting a bit more character in it than everything else, because I wipe everything else so recklessly or feverishly, I guess you could say. But I've been a black wedge player for such a long time that, man, it's fun and different to look down at something unique. Are you a big fan of a certain finish on your wedges, or did you just go for like on a whim for the nickel?
I kind of end up on a whim for the nickel. The fitter kind of suggested it, but in general, I lean away from anything that is chrome. I just don't want the glare, especially on the higher lofted clubs. I played black for several years, and I've also tried the raw, which I actually quite enjoyed, other than my towels getting all full of rust and never coming clean. but I actually quite like those. But the nickel's different. It gives me that non-glare finish that I look for, and a little something extra.
I have a really random question to ask you, because you might be like the mad scientist behind all these great limited edition things that THP is coming out with right now. And one of the things that has kind of continued to grow and change in the golf experience is the whole trinket thing. Like every course has a billion things you could buy with a logo on it, whether it's a ball marker that has the shape of the logo, or I'm a sucker for a good Yeti. What are you seeing right now? What do people like really latch on to?
Oh, I still think it's, everyone loves a good putter cover. The Yetis are super popular, water bottles, hoodies. I've said this before. Like, I think the golf hoodie is the hot take. The golf hoodie is taking over the quarter zip in some ways.
So, why'd you say it's a hot take like that?
Because some people refuse to give up the quarter zip. I think a lot more are leaning hoodies, whether they're lightweight type hoodies. You know,
I have a name, you know. You don't have to just call me some people. That's not nice. Yeah, I mean, I'm just messing with you. I remember way back in the day, we'd go to golf courses, and the one thing I would buy at every course, and I have one right now, it's actually a gift from my buddy, it's a ball marker. It's what a flex too, eh? You went to the Masters this year. I've still never gone, like, yay me. But he brings me back a ball marker. So at one point I was like, all right, every course I go to, I'll get one of those little ball markers. Well, then these ball markers started to get bigger. Now they are, you know, the size of like a dollar or like a half dollar and whatever. And at some point you just run out of space, right? And you're like, all right, what else should I collect? But like, there's so much of that now that each course you go to, like, well, what do I want to take a memory home with? And especially if something really cool or different happens and suddenly you're back in the pro shop, you want to buy something else. I think the Yeti one is probably the worst for me because the wife says I have more than enough at this point. I just got a really cool looking one at Grable. It's like a baby gray blue almost. It's super nice. Do you think the ball markers are still huge, or do you think that it's getting a little ridiculous?
I think the ball marker is still very huge. I mean, it's the smallest thing. It's one of the most inexpensive things you can usually buy in a golf course, so it's easy for people to pick up. My personal problem with them is I have thousands of them, it feels like, at some point. And, like, what do you do with them all? Like, I have a couple that you go to, right? Your favorite course or your most recent course or whatever it is. But I just don't know, unless you put them all in a big bowl or something.
We get like one of those epoxy tabletops and just put it underneath that. Maybe
if you ever do something like that with it, like, that is going to be 100% like super, super cool. But I mean, I've probably lost almost as many as I bought as well. So.
That's the hard part too, is once you get one you like, you stick with it, right? Like I had a one from Bay Hill that I'm not going to put the guy on blast who lost it, but I know he felt bad because I marked his ball at one point. He just left it there. So it was very unfortunate. We were both pretty disappointed. But now I've had a blue Mission In one that I've used for, I don't know, a couple of years now. And it's like, you could always switch that out, but I never do for whatever reason. You just get comfortable with what you look at, right?
Do you have your favorite one? Like, I don't know where you, I usually take mine out of my pocket and put it back in the golf bag after every round, right? There's been a couple times where I like stick my hand in there trying to look for it and I can't find it and I freak out.
Horror.
Did I lose it? Oh God. And I only to find it in the pair of pants I wore the day last time. So.
Oh yeah. No, I use a divot tool that has a ball marker magnet on it. So it's always connected to that, which of course ends up in the pocket. And that's a problem that I've had with, I love the bigger markers. They're a lot of fun, but they're super annoying to put in someone's way. First of all, and second of all, they fall out of your pocket so easy when you're riding in a cart, like for whatever reason, they just come flying out. And I don't know, I've lost way too many of those doing that. So not, I tend to prefer the smaller one, but yeah, man, I think I need to diversify the options. I've got somewhere down to my left here is an old, probably, what was that, B330 box full of them.
Okay.
Yeah, a couple.
And you can start a lot of golf ball box too.
What's that?
So you can store a lot of those in a golf ball box as well.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Yeah. And every time I bring it out, I lose 10 to my son. So I have to be careful when I actually look at them, but at least someone's using them, right?
Do you like the metal ones or the plastic? Like I kind of love having a little, like the ones we just saw at Grable.
Oh
the
yeah.
Little plastic ones with the nubs, because if you lose them, it's not as big of a deal. And the bigger ones are more like collector's items for me, and the ones I use on the course are the little ones.
The Dormy properties have a bunch of different options. We've got the little flags at a couple of them. I think some of like a red one, a white one, a black one. I actually used it last round because I have this this like switchblade looking divot tool or butterfly knife looking thing, and I used one of the plastic ones. I don't know what it is about them, like they're just not as premium or whatever, so I'm not as inclined to reach for it, but it's probably one of those things, like you have a nicer one, so I use that, but it's also really cool because it's from that place. So you know, right. It's the mental battle of what you actually pick. What a goofy thing. I'm starting a thread right now on THP asking the deep reasoning around the ball marker people use, and I cannot wait for that thread to blow my mind.
I have a reasoning for mine, and I'll put two in my pocket. And you mentioned two? It earlier. Mm. So sometimes I'll carry the bigger one, like you said, because I do like to use it. If I'm going to put it down and look from the other side of the hole or something, I can see it better. But if my ball is going to be in somebody's line, that's when I use the small one.
You know, I will say I appreciate, and I'm reaching here because I have, you know, all these little trinkets in front of me. I've got this one from Valhalla that is the big one with the little one in it. And then the one I just got at Grable does the same thing. It's like a huge one, and then inside is like the GB logo, so you can make it smaller. So I think that's pretty cool too. I think at one point Josh had one of the ones that JB had one of the ones that had like a little pin flag, and he would, instead of laying it on
green,
he would like place it in the green.
I had that one.
It's really funny.
The flag is no more.
Yeah.
I have no idea what happened to it.
Oh yeah. That's the other hard part. Like the second you lose it, do you really want to use a ball marker that just has a giant hole in it? So nope. that's a tough one. So then it ends up like on the shelf, flipped the other way, right? Yeah, I appreciate the variety, man. I think that's part of the fun. But I do think that the competition to make me buy it is getting harder. Gray Bull got me this time. Well, actually, someone had to pay a debt, and I'm not gonna put him on blast either to get that. But yeah, the other hard part is like, if you go to every golf course and you buy one thing, I used to buy towels a lot. Club glove was in like every golf shop, and I would buy a club glove towel when I would go to somewhere I really liked. And then I had 12 club glove towels. It's like, all right, we have all the colors. We have, you know, different trims on them. Like, settle down, dude. But then you go on to something else like polos. Now I have 25 logoed polos, and it just, it's crazy how competitive the pro shop's becoming. And yet we're all still suckers for it. I've got a hat on now from my home course. Shout out to Imperial, who does great stuff. Like, there's just so many options. And how do you even begin to pick what you're going to do on that day?
For me, something just has to grab my attention. You know, I've, like at Grable, for example, I was in and out of that pro shop probably no less than 10 times. and 8 of those times I kind of walked out with like, nothing just really jumped out at me. And then I saw something the next day and I was like, yep, that's it. So
yeah,
it just depends. I'm not always looking for one certain thing. It's just got to grab my attention. That's all.
You and Grant the same. Yeah, he definitely did that too.
Yeah. except when I walked out with 8 purchases, he left with 8 purchases every single time.
That's so good. There's more I had to ask you about. There's one big one. So we were talking at Grable a little bit about trying a different variety of golf game, the way we were going to score and things like that. We've had a lot of match play, a lot of scramble, shamble, alt shot, that type of stuff. And the chance to mix it up was pretty cool. And funny enough, and this seems to be how things go, when I got back from that experience, the very next round I played with my guys, one of the dudes goes, "Hey, you guys want to play a game called Chicago?" I'm like, "As long as we don't have to go to Chicago, I'm in." It's like the loser has to drive to Chicago. And it's like a points-based system, where you all start with the same number, and then it's modified based on handicap, and you get points for the good scores. Everything up to a bogey, I think, is awarded. Yeah, and then it doubles zero. And your goal is to get like the highest number possible. So you start at minus 39, and you try and get basically to zero. And it was a lot of fun. It was a different take on just a scoring system. I'm sure if you had have done all the same stuff that you would in other games, it'd come pretty much close, but it also gives someone a chance to take a huge jump. So they go from like, "Oh, I need 2 pars just to tie you." And then they make one birdie and it's like, "Oh, now we're tied. You suck." And it's like, you know, that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of heckling. I happened to have a really good day, so I ended up winning or beating them. I guess you could say we weren't really playing for anything. But then there was like this huge battle for second place, and there's a huge battle for who didn't want to be last. And it was really fun. It's just a different take on it. What do you play many different games with your guys?
I don't. I don't have a regular group or that I play with like once a week or whatever. I play in a couple leagues where it's usually like 2 versus 2, and it's kind of predetermined whether it's going to be stroke play or match play beforehand. The one time I did play like Wolf, which we happened to play together, I actually enjoyed it once I understood the rules. So unfortunately I miss out on a lot of the fun games. Like we were supposed to do special scoring this past weekend, at Grable with the fantasy football tie-in. And that was part of the thing that got lost in the rain, let's say. But I was kind of looking forward to it. Just something different other than, you know, your standard match play or stroke play.
Yeah. There's so many different games. I started a thread on THP, and again, I'd love to hear some more chatter in the discussion that this episode generates, what your favorite game is. But it's so funny to hear what people really anchor in on and the different versions of it. Like there's a game called Sixes, which is also called like a bunch of different things, where you like COD or COP, or you know, basically it's carts, opposites, and drivers or something like that. Like it's kind of weird. There
sounds complicated.
Well, it's the same thing as threes, but like sixes, but it's just defined based on where you're sitting in your carts. So it's kind of funny. Oh. Don't ever play Vegas, no matter what people say to you. If anyone says press, like we had our buddy Jose press us, or I guess you and Jose press at one point, that didn't go the best, but presses are terrifying. You gotta say no presses right at the beginning, otherwise things get out of hand, man. They get out of hand real fast. So yeah, I love it. I want to hear people's favorite games because I want to play more of them. And I get so sick of this, like, oh, we got to do modified something to where you're doing something different. I want to play my score, and I want that to be impacted by a game that we're all heckling each other for, because that's the whole point, right? It's not just about your score that day. And what we realized, especially in the middle of the round when the numbers really started to mean something, one of our buddies, he had two miserable holes, and he's like, oh God, this is just the worst. And then he realized, well, even if I double here, it doesn't mean anything because it's zero. So like I can birdie the next hole and my zero means nothing because I just got a birdie. So now he's like pressing and trying to get ahead there. So it adds that little extra element that I think people miss out on if they're not doing it.
Do you think it makes it more fun in a way for people who may not be having par on every hole? Let's say.
Well, but that's the beauty of the handicap system, first of all. But it's also the beauty of being in a team game, especially something like, oh, another one I want to try is left and right. Have you ever heard of that?
No.
So all four guys hit. The guys who are furthest left on the hole are paired. The guys furthest right on the hole are paired.
Okay.
So every hole it changes. Yeah. Anyways, what I love about it is the game can take you away from having a bad round and let you focus on a couple things. Number one, picking your partner up on a hole. Number two, using their score to make you feel good. You know, there's so many added elements to it. And especially like, let's say you're over your handicap. We call them throwaway rounds where you put the score in gin and it just kind of ignores it based on your index because it's so
been
bad.
There.
But
been there.
But I mean, you have a chance for the last five holes to be great, right? And that still allows you to do that while meaning something. You know, that to me is where I really love it. And what I don't love is people like, oh, we got to play for, you know, $20 for skins and $20 for gross and $20 for net and $20 for pairings. And it's like, can we just play for $5? Can I just say I beat you? Like that is my
beer.
Yeah. A beer is usually my limit because I don't need the money for gratification. I need to beat you for it. So
not competitive at all.
Yeah, not at all. No. So yeah, I definitely think that people would benefit a lot from playing more games while they're out there. It takes it away from the brutal part of golf, is where you're so isolated in your own score and allows you to celebrate with others.
Sure.
You on board with that?
I love it. I wish I had a regular group so I could do more of these games.
Well, come on down, man. We'll get you down here. We'll test drive a couple. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm in. Let's do it.
Oh man. I have one more question for you before we wrap up today. And super glad to have you back on the show, by the way. It's been way too long.
It's been a long time, yeah.
But you can, I want you to have the opportunity to get real mad about something. And I don't care what it is. What is something that really pisses you off about golf? It can be your game. It could be something that someone else is doing. It could be the idiots who repost stuff on social media where people are faking stuff that look terrible, whatever you want.
Oh, all right. Well, obviously there's slow play. I'm not going to get into that. Everyone complains about slow play. My biggest pet peeve right now is fix your damn ball marks, right? Like, I'm tired of walking to a green and seeing ball marks all over the place. When I grew up playing golf, like, they were like, fix your mark and fix someone else's. That's what I was taught. And I don't know if it's because of the influx of new golfers, they just don't know any better, or if it's just pure laziness. Like, I don't know what it is, but I can't tell you the amount of greens that I've walked on and just, they're just littered everywhere. Like, come on, people, fix your ball marks.
It's kind of terrifying that you're mad and smiling at the same time. Like, I wouldn't mess with you when you're smiling and yelling. That's terrifying.
It makes me laugh because I'm like yelling, but I'm like, for real, like, fix your ball marks. It's not that hard. It takes 2 seconds.
So we've had some issues with that at my course as well. It's been a really strange weather year where we've had to apply a lot of water. And when we haven't, the water's applied itself because of like really heavy rain. So the greens are inevitably softer than we'd like them to be, which naturally means that every step will have a bit of an impact on the day. And for people to, like, when they hit the ball with their greens, it definitely leaves plenty to see. Not the same as some of these firmer courses where you see a tiny little depression. Like, every piece of our green is shown based on the contact of the ball, and it really digs in. So, like, if you leave a ball mark on my green at my home course, it looks terrible. Yeah. And for you to look at that and be like, I'm good, just keep walking. My son is irritated by it now. He gets mad when people don't do it. He's disappointed with them. He's 9. It's a requirement in my group. My boys, we comment on it a lot. I don't really understand why people think they don't need to.
Like I said, I don't know if it's just because they don't know any better. Like, nobody taught them. You know, we have such a new influx of golfers in the last couple of years. Maybe they're not like, you know, we were when we played golf with our dad, or like you're doing with your son, and you're teaching him the right way. They just decided one day, hey, we're going to go to the golf course and we're going to play. And maybe they just don't know any better. I'd like to hope that maybe that is the case and it's not the other way, you know, but like, it's not that hard. Fix a ball.
No, it's really not. And unfortunately, we've seen a little bit of it where we used to follow some of the high school kids that would play. I had the privilege to come play our course, and none of those kids fixed their divots. Like, it was terrible if you followed them. I think the word baffling is better, because it's like, it's your privilege to come here. And there's more to that story about their entitlement that they felt like they had. It's really disappointing, especially when it's younger players, because I feel like that's our next generation. If they're not being educated, who's going to, you know, continue that down the line? But it's pretty much a no-brainer for me, buddy. I feel like simple golf etiquette and love thy course, you know? Well, here's my question. What's worse to you? not fixing two divots, so in two holes, two divots, or not raking one bunker between the two holes?
Fixing divots is worse to me.
Really?
Yeah, I think I'd be okay if there was never a rake in a bunker again.
Yeah, honestly, you're a sicko. Like, you know that?
Let the bunkers be a hazard, right?
How do you say I live in Michigan without saying I live in Michigan?
When you purposely want to be in a bunker instead of thicker rough, like, it's not a hazard anymore because it's so fluffy and beautiful. If no one raked it and you had to play it out of a hole, then it would be a true hazard.
Yeah, to your wrists, probably. You're a sicko, man. I love it. Any final thoughts today before we wrap up?
Don't drag your feet either. How about that?
Don't drag feet. Oh, that's, yeah. Why do you got to burn the place down before you leave? What are we doing here? Jeez. Hey, no, good luck. That's good luck this week, buddy. It's a big, big moment in your world. I appreciate you taking the time to come on and chat a little bit. I love that we got to share Grey Bowl together. I love the shirt you're wearing. It's cracking me up every time I look over at you. And yeah, man, I appreciate you.
Hey, thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Sure. Hey, if you guys are playing golf this week, have fun. Fix your damn ball marks, apparently. Don't drag your feet and drink bourbon. That's what I've gotten out of this episode. Do have fun, though, and we'll see you guys next week. Now it's time to send it over to Don Brown for this week's Shaft Education, brought to you by True Temper.
Hey, everybody. Don Brown, back here at Shaft University, answering another question. This week's question is an interesting one about how our hockey technologies and golf technologies overlap. Some of you may not know that we actually have a hockey division under the brand True Hockey that makes carbon fiber hockey sticks. There definitely is some crossover there. I actually learned to design golf shafts from the gentleman that now runs our hockey R&D group. There's a lot of crossover in the materials. One group brings in a new material to try out. The other guys are inevitably going to be jealous and want to try it too. There's also a lot of differences. The hockey guys have to worry about impact on their shafts. We only have to do that if you're throwing your club, and if it breaks, that's not really our fault. That's on you. Where the technology has really crossed over is the hockey guys, when I first started, really just made rectangular tubes. And they've taken some of the golf technology, like kick point, torque, swing weight, other things like that, and moved that into the hockey technology. So hockey runs a few years behind, but they definitely picked up from us. And we've learned a lot of things from them too, particularly about using thinner materials that are often used in hockey sticks. Hope that answers your question. Talk to you guys next time.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.